after a summer that started with mass killings in Buffalo, New York, Uvalde, Texas, and Highland Park, Illinois. September is almost here, and it's time to get back to activism. The tide of gun violence in America continues to rise, even as modest gun regulation measures pass Congress and the Supreme Court of the United States curtails states' rights to regulate gun ownership. Join us Tuesday, August 30th at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM with special guests X Gonzalez from Parkland, Florida, and Abby Clements, a teacher from Sandy Hook Elementary School, as Radio Gag hosts our Activism Back to School episode. Listen into our one-hour special and take advantage of special premiums when you become a BAI buddy in the name of Radio Gag. That's Radio Gag, the Gays Against Guns show, Tuesday, August 30th at 2 p.m., Radio Gag, Bulletproof Radio.
WBAI New York.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. And it's time now for Night Shift. Mike Sargent, and this is Night Shift, and continuing in our celebration of the 30th anniversary of Night Shift, I'll be playing an encore presentation of a past Night Shift show. A couple things, though, listening back to these shows that have occurred to me and that have stood out a lot. Because our sensibility here on Night Shift is that life is like science fiction. The last few weeks, I've been playing a lot of shows with great interviews. We had an interview with Mia Johnson. We had an interview with Francis Ford Coppola. We had Andy Summers. We had Ice Cube. We had all these different people have been on. So, and there are going to be more because I've had some amazing interviews here on the show. But one of the things, just when I play just the show and cover stories and things that are going on in reality of the time, we would talk about where these things would lead. And in many ways, many of the things that we thought would lead to certain things have led to exactly those things. So, were we prophets or crackpots? I don't know. But one of our resident crackpots, Mike from Jersey,
that's a nice word for what I have,
right, crackpot, was compelled, because I was just going to do a topper and a tail, which is what they call it in podcasting. It's like an intro like I've been doing and saying, hey, you're about to hear this. And then a tail like, hey, you just heard that. But you were like, oh, there's too many stories going on. I need to come on. We have to talk. I have to talk about reality today.
Yeah, there's a lot of nuttiness happening.
So, yeah, there are a few stories I can talk about that from where I'm sitting, life continues. Like, we're deep in, like, we're in season 4 of this science fiction series that is life. What stories really stood out to you that you felt like you had to come on and talk about?
Well, there are two in particular. There's one that I've heard like 1,000 different variations of, which was basically a chunk of ice that's going to chip off of Greenland and it's going to melt and we're going to have like, essentially we're at the halfway point. Not even the halfway point. We're at the point where the ice is definitely going to melt.
The ice is going to break. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the ice is going to break, and we are past the point to basically stop the oceans from rising. And now it's just a question of how bad it's going to be. So we're not even like it's happening. It's a done deal. It's just about how high it is. So that sort of freaked me out, and I've read stuff like that before, but Antarctica's melting and yada yada. But the other one that was sounded like a 1970s sci-fi film to me was one, and it was one of the West Coast states, I want to say Arizona, but basically it got so hot that there is some sort of rare illness that comes from a fungus that because of the intensity of the heat, humans that are in the desert in that time are catching this fungus, and they're catching this like weird illness. So,
a new heat-borne disease.
Yes.
Okay, now, you know what's interesting about that is now, I have to say, and I want to, you know, sometimes I listen back and I'm like, are we like doom and gloom? No, this is just reality. Okay, yes, we're definitely past the tipping point. Scientists were saying, we're headed to the tipping point. We need to stop You know, even Al Gore, after he lost the election, made a whole documentary, you know, about
it. Well, he said in 2014,
yeah, exactly.
Chinatown will be submerged in water.
Well, here's the thing, okay? The things that we thought were going to happen, it's much worse. It's much. You see what's happening in Mississippi. You see what's happening all along the South. You see all these, let's just say, all these signs, all over the world, as they're flooding. I don't know if you've seen their giant buildings are being flooded out. And this is all from climate change. This is all what we were in denial of. And it says something to me about the human race. Our capacity for denial is so enormous on a global scale, okay? And it's not just denial, because denial is one factor. I think there's the other factor is distraction. You know, we want to be distracted. Life is not great for most people, for many people. So we need distractions. So we don't really look at what's going on. We don't look at either our own unhappiness, you know, because you can take a pill for that, or we don't really want to look at just how effed up things are. So, meanwhile, the third factor is that those who are in power could care less about the future.
Oh, they don't give a damn.
They don't. Obviously, all these mega corporations from, you know, if you name an industry and you see how it's destroying us, and in our country, I've come to a theory, which I'll share with you after you tell me. So yes, the heat-borne disease. It's just all these things we didn't even think about, like the tarmac melting at the airport. Nobody thought of that. Nobody was thinking like, hey, you know, global warming, we'll have to deal with this too.
And there's like an area, there's like a part of Iraq now that every summer it is literally too hot for human beings. A human being cannot go in that space.
The extreme weather will be an everyday thing. Flooding, storms. We haven't even hit typhoon season. Wait till you see what the storm's going to be like this year.
September's going to be.
Yeah. And here's the denial thing. Remember we had, do you remember the name of the storm that we had here in New York? Sandy, Hurricane Sandy. Yeah, look at that for a minute. It took you a minute. All right, so Hurricane Sandy came, and if you remember, BAI was like like submerged in water. That
up
building,
our coast.
Yeah, and now
the aquarium. The aquarium just opened for refurbishment.
Now, have we built in anything infrastructure-wise?
Not exactly. Nothing.
So when it hits again, because there will be another Hurricane Sandy. As a matter of fact, Hurricane Sandys will become common. That is my prediction. This is 2022. We're going to predict now. If Night Shift's still on. I don't think it'll be on 30 years from now. But if Night Shift's still on, like 10 years from now, and, you know, New York is underwater, and they haven't built the New York barrier, then there it is. So, all right. So the heat-borne disease, that is pretty fascinating. What's the other story?
Melting of the ice. And I'm trying to remember there was.
Well, I'll say this about the melting of the ice, is that, okay, yes, the oceans will rise, and nobody wants to live in coastal. Living in a coastal city will be, beachfront property will have the inverse value, I think, in going into the future.
That was what the ice melting article said. It's like everyone is living on the coast of the entire United States.
Yep. Like,
be
like
careful.
New York. Okay, so.
And the number's like there's 600 million people living around the entire coast.
There it is.
That's a lot of humans.
Listen, humans have. We have affected Earth. Now, Earth will survive. I don't know that we will. At least not the humans of today. Because I have theories as to why we have the ADHD, which is like an epidemic that we're ignoring right now as well, along with all these other things, all these other ways in which we've weakened the human genome by, let's just say, and this is where I was going to go to my theory about America, okay, and capitalism, is that we have, our entire country is literally based on debt and poison.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because throughout history, that's like everything about what we eat, everything about the industrialized food, everything, it's all about poison. Right? It's cheap to eat crap. So people are poor, people eat crap. snap, that crap has also been processed and modified. And, you know, who knows what, a vibe?
Yeah.
That's got to affect us.
Well, I want to say, I was away working in Germany some years back, and I was there for some time, but, and I'm not, this was in Europe, and I don't want to say that Europe is necessarily has better food than us. In terms of fresh available
stuff? No, they don't. No. Europe, where? Not the UK.
Well, this is, I'm talking about Germany,
you know,
right now.
UK is the colon cancer capital of the planet, so you know.
But anyway, so I'm in Germany, but the first, I was eating, trying to eat more healthy stuff, and I was eating meats, but I was trying to eat, like, you know, really healthy stuff, nothing processed and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, a month after I was out of the United States in Europe from just, like, digesting new food, my energy levels were completely just shot up to the roof. I was like, wow, I don't feel as groggy. I don't feel as... It was like I got the American food crap out of my system.
So where were you eating? Where was this?
I was eating, this was mostly in Berlin, and I would, like, move around, but essentially staying in Germany. But I would get stuff from delis and just fresh stuff and fresh yogurt and fresh vegetables and...
But then you came back here to New York and you eat crap again.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, you see, it's your eating habits, not just where you eat, because you can eat healthy in New York,
that's
too.
True.
Yeah, but the access and
my habits
and cost
at home are terrible.
Your habits at home are terrible. Well, see, you are like many Americans. And so, you know, meanwhile, while all this is happening, while global warming has come and microplastics have invaded everything, and they're now found in fetuses and you know, microplastics is just one of the time bombs.
You've been talking about that for years.
Yeah, of course.
And now every major news channel.
Now people know, talk about it. Now it's a thing. But all I'm saying is microplastics, climate change, you know, there's so many aspects of our current civilization that are literally time bombs waiting to go off. Let's not even talk about Fukushima and all the radioactive water that's been pumping millions and millions and billions of gallons into the ocean for years and years. Let's not even talk about that. So, you know, we live on this, we poison ourselves, so now we're poisoning the planet.
Right.
And we've wiped out so many species of animal, insect, plants. It's just, it's stunning. What we, our ability to create death is pretty amazing. Now,
can I just very quickly, sorry to interrupt, I found the actual story with the fungus, and I have to read you this headline.
The fungus, let me hear the fungus.
So this is the headline. It took everything. The disease that can be contracted by breathing California's air. So
there
it's called
it
Valley Fever.
It's called Valley Fever.
Yes, it has a name, Valley Fever.
For sure.
Derived from a fungus that lives in the U.S. Southwest soil, is on the rise as climate crisis dries out the landscape.
So Valley Fever, monkeypox, COVID, BA2. What's the one that made it come back just recently?
SARS.
No, not SARS. Polio just
polio,
made it come
yes.
back. Polio made it come back. So we are going to be riddled with disease and plagues. We're going to have disasters all over. It's coming, massive destruction. It's hard not to see this as the end of times. But what's ironic about the concept of the end of times is that you always picture the end of times like everybody's going, oh my God, oh. But no, it's like, oh, Britney's talking about what happened. What, you know, Britney's free. Or, oh, hey, you know, so-and-so did some nonsense. So, hey, you know, so we're quibbling, and paying attention to so many things that we shouldn't.
What's going to be in the next Marvel movie?
Yeah, exactly. So I say all that to say, I have to say, I must not sound like a fan of humanity these days. But meanwhile, Chinese scientists claim to have engineered the world's first mouse with fully reprogrammed genes. This finding, that's like, do we need this? What are you talking about? This finding proved the significance of chromosomal rearrangement, a crucial evolutionary indicator of the emergence of a new species.
Wait, so they created an entirely new species?
A new species, yes, man-made species. This is what every science fiction, Mary Shelley was writing about this. Okay, here we go. Researchers from the Chinese Academy of Science, that's CAS, claim to have found a novel technique for programmable chromosome fusion, successfully producing mice with genetic changes that occur on a million-year evolutionary scale in the laboratory. So, evolving species. Now, how long before we do it on humans?
Dude,
what rich billionaire needs to look at this and go, you know what, let's fund this? Okay.
Well, I think cybernetic implants are going to be before that.
Yeah, well, cybernetic implant,
we're
that's like sort
5 years away from that.
Yeah, but that, yeah, I was going to say, that's like Blu-ray. That's like an interim format, okay? Here we go. The laboratory house mouse has maintained a standard 40-chromosome karyotype, or the full picture of the organism's chromosomes, after more than 100 years of artificial breeding. Yeah, 100 years of artificial. This is how long we've been at this. It says here, over longer time scales, however, the karyotype changes caused by the chromosome rearrangements are common. Rodents have 3.2 to 3.5 rearrangements per million years, whereas primates have 1.6. The mouse, known as Little Zuzu, or Little Bamboo, was the world's first mammal with fully reprogrammed genes. So
basically the human race is going to be wiped out by some tidal wave, and the genetic mice are going to survive.
Well, I'm just saying, they're gonna, like, whatever happens to us, I think that they feel science will figure out a way, like, all right, everybody's got ADHD, or everybody's dying from this disease. We'll start to have breed humans. Look, we have major plagues we have never cured, so we will start to have to breed humans that are immune to it.
You realize you're literally talking about the super soldier serum.
Dude, I know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about life is like science fiction! Okay, that's basically, here we are. We are in this period, this pre-dystopian era of humanity. Now, going back 4 or 5 years, Night Shift. Now, I had this special episode here, so my producers, is there more you want to tell me before you
back? I wanted to ask you, you a question, which is relevant, which is, as a science fiction writer, how do you feel living in the times of a science fiction era?
Well, I talk about it every week. I mean, it's, you know, I always thought that life was like science fiction. It always seemed slightly surreal to me. And I mean, we're in it. We're everything that could be imagined can come to pass, you know, good and bad, you know, and just like anything else, you know, the dichotomy of human beings is what a lot of what science fiction is saying something about the human condition, you know, and like what it is to be human. Like if you know, you have a concept like, what if humans could, and then you write a whole story and you buy all the characters and everything, because yeah, this is what human beings would do. If this were, you know, if magic were real, this is what humans would do. Or if, you know, we could transport, if we could fly through space, this is what we'd be doing. You know, we'd be dominating species. We'd be doing this. We'd be doing, so all of those, let's just say those cautionary tales, which I think, whether it was Mary Shelley or H.G. Wells or any number of science fiction writers who have been, in my opinion, warning us about who and what we are or making us look at it, I feel, to me, as a science fiction fan, as a science fiction writer, I'm often extrapolating where this is going to lead to, and I am seldom wrong.
So, in a way, it's sort of like, as being a science fiction writer, in terms of research, it's like you're trying to create prophecy.
Well, the thing about science fiction is that science fiction, what influences reality more than science fiction? Name something in your lifetime that you've ever seen that has, there is no genre that has influenced human beings more than science fiction, because science fiction is really, you know, what the stories are is one thing, but on the surface it's about what's possible. So from flip phones, communicators to flip phones, from iPads to whatever those things they were using in 2001 A Space Odyssey, or whatever that thing that Kirk used to write on the bridge where they would hand him this thing. It was an iPad, okay? So all those things, in many ways, I think science fiction, you know, you imagine what humans would and could do. Like a communicator, cell phone, like, okay, what if you could communicate across huge, huge distances? And then the next level of that is like, okay, you do it. Now, what if you could send that picture? What if you could FaceTime somebody from Malaysia? You know, so, I mean, we call it.
Why stop with a picture? Why not do a hologram?
Well, there it is. That hologram's the next. So I'm just saying all those extrapolations of where the technology could go. What would humans want? What would we want to have in our lives? Even the notion of where we see virtual reality and how that's going to impact our lives. Because as our lives get worse, and when I say reality, the more you read, the more you watch the news, there's a lot of bad news. There's a lot of like, what the hell's going on? Right. So you have a choice. Either they call it doom scrolling. So either you doom scroll and you're just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Or you distract yourself. You watch a movie about the end of the world, or you just do something else to distract yourself literally from reality, because reality depresses you. So to me, VR, virtual reality, anything that takes you away from the current, you know, if you're living in a hovel, but, you know, you put on a headset and you're living in a palace, guess what?
Well, yeah,
get home to the hovel, you're going to put on the headset.
Do you think we're all going to, with like Meta and all that nonsense, that basically we're going to be doing like Ready Player One, everyone's going to be wearing a headset in their trailer and...
Well, it's interesting we're having this conversation because the two guests that I have on the show that we're going to play... They're both, I would call them partial Luddites, okay?
Right.
Because they refuse to get smartphones. You know, they still have flip phones, both of them. They have flip phones. They like, no, I refuse. And they met each other on the show for the first time.
Oh,
okay,
wow,
yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that.
Like two semi-letter friends. And it's Eugene and Jennifer. But what's interesting, and the topics and everything, I think everybody will really enjoy because we talk about all this thing, technology, old versus new, you know, online reading versus actually reading books. The question is not really whether we're headed there, but the question is like, what's going to put us there? And it's the same thing, like, were we ready for social media?
Right.
Were we ready for cell phones? Were we ready for home computers? There's so many aspects of technology in our lives that, and this is what we discuss in the show, Eugene's feel is that technology is thrust upon us often. We have to embrace it. You know, he was lamenting the loss of LPs. And it's an interesting, it's an interesting question, I think, to pose. Just, you know, not only will, you know, who will benefit for us to be immersed in VR? Like, to whose advantage is it for us to use ATMs and no longer have bank tellers, to have things automated? To whose advantage? Is it to the client? Is it to the company? Is it to the worker who's losing the job? Whose advantage? Who really gains the most by whatever shifts are thrust upon us in terms of how we live?
I want to say one thing about Eugene's argument. I do agree with it. And almost using like LPs is, you know, like if you compare the Amish saying like, this is, you know, horse and carriage. This is as far technologically as we're going to go. We're not going to go beyond this. But the flaw in the argument of the LPs is, I mean, Gen Z kids are buying LPs.
I don't know. I talk about that. Listen, we cover all that. So this was January 2019. So things that were going on at that time, I think it'll be interesting to hear. But then we'll be back.
I think there's no place to hide.
I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed. I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. 99.5 FM.
Hi, this is Valley Forge Berkshire Sequoia. Valley Forge Berkshire Sequoia.
The name of the show.
This is Tom Central. Channel open for Executive Order AC-3423. Listen to this, boys.
Night shift again. Night shift again. Night shift again.
All right, so this is Night Shift, and I am Mike Sargent, and we are in our new time slot. We're here at 10 p.m. till midnight, and this is Martin Luther King Day, and I've done many, many Martin Luther King specials, and originally I had planned to do one this evening, but we are going to do a fairly traditional Night Shift show, and I want to welcome back an old co-host, Eugene Key.
Hi, Mike.
Hello. How are you? Eugene Key. It's been a long time. And also another guest who has not been on in quite some time. But what was the first year you ever came on?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember. Back down
there. Back in the late 20th century. Yes. So back in the late 20th century, you came on. So this is Jennifer. And we're going to talk about a number of things this morning. We've got some headlines for you to stay tuned, so you can read. You read one, and then Eugene, you read one, just so you know what it's going to be. So you go first, Jennifer.
Microchip implants for currency takes off.
There it is. Yeah, what about you, Eugene? What do you got?
What do I have? I have traditional masculinity, officially labeled harmful by the American Psychological Association.
Ah, okay. Harmful. And you, what do you have, Jennifer?
New law, mishandling of animals will now be registered as other illegal law offenders.
Okay. And Eugene, what else have you got?
I have leather made from human skin during slavery still being sold today.
Okay. And Jennifer, what do you have?
The Sisters of the Valley are nuns that loved weed a lot.
Okay.
You may have heard of
and
that one.
And Eugene, what have you got?
I can't top that one.
No, you can't.
This one says, the world's smallest computer is so tiny, it makes a rice grain look huge.
Wow.
And what have you got, Jennifer?
I've got, have aliens found us? An interview with the Harvard astronomer, Avi Loeb, about the mysterious interstellar object, Umanuma?
That's good enough, yes. Now, we've been covering this story. You know, there. I don't know if you know, there was this wave that went through the planet, and there's been this probe that came by and just went there, and then we've been getting these repeated radio signals that are, like, you know, not naturally occurring. So, obviously, we're being probed by the aliens, and, you know, everything we thought about is going to happen soon. But that, all these stories that you guys have been giving us the titles for and knowing that you're going to hear on this show explains the theme of this show. The theme of Night Shift is that life is like science fiction. And we have the stories here to prove it. The word that is the theme of the show. The theme of the show, dichotomy. The theme of tonight's show is dichotomy. And by dichotomy, what does dichotomy mean, Jennifer?
According to this dictionary, it's a division or contrast between two things that are or are represented as being opposed or entirely different. Quote, a rigid dichotomy between science and mysticism. End of quote.
Okay. You with me, Eugene?
No.
You don't understand what dichotomy is. You know what? If you don't quite get dichotomy, you keep listening to the show, and you will.
Okay. You will.
I'm okay.
I'm going to give you, I'll give you an example.
Give me an example. That'll help. I think that'll help.
Okay, this will help. I'll give you an example, and I'll, this story specifically for Jennifer. Let me find it here.
Is it the Madonna horror complex?
No, this is not.
That's a dichotomy.
That is it. All right, explain that to
Eugene. Good example.
Eugene, do you understand the Madonna horror?
Yeah, I get that now.
That's a dichotomy. Okay, you're beginning to.
I'm getting. Give me another one.
All right, I'm going to give you another one. The way this is set up, it's hard for me to read what I have. Okay, here it is. I'll let you read this story, Eugene, and then I'll let Jennifer read a story. And you will now, and then you will understand what a dichotomy is. Okay, here we go. I could not get this to get it online, but I'm going to read this story. This is the first story for you, Eugene, just so you understand.
Thank you.
I got it. And then I'll let Jennifer read the next story. Okay, a major U.S. college is moving almost all of its library books off campus, and it represents a major change in how young people learn. This is from Business Insider. This is just from the 18th of January. Okay, so are you following this, Jennifer? It says technology is constantly shaping the way young people learn, and educators are always on the lookout for ways to use technology to better serve their students. One college is taking that to its logical extreme by removing almost all the physical library books on campus.
Okay, I'm not happy about that.
Okay, earlier this month, Georgia Tech put the finishing touches on the first phase of its Library Next project. An ambitious four-year plan to renovate the Georgia Tech Library with more seating space, room for student collaboration, multimedia studios, and computer labs. To make room for these additions, the university has cleared out most of the library's book stacks and moved more than 95% of the physical books it housed, around 1 million items, to an off-campus storage site shared with Emory University. The project is a fundamental rethinking of what a research library in the century of an academic institution is supposed to do. This is what Catherine Mary Russ, the Georgia Tech Dean of Libraries, told Business Insider. Now, what is she going to be the dean of after this? Okay, just digital?
Okay, I will admit I'm a librarian, and I'm not happy about this.
Okay, all right. Says the move signals a major change in how young people learn. It represents that the world of scholarship is digital. It is not. It is not analog.
What's the name of this school again?
And that's a part of the scholarly community for a few years or for the rest of your life. This is where the world is going, and you need to be a part of it.
This is
Georgia Tech.
That is.
Didn't they see Book of Eli with Denzel Washington?
All right, now. You're with that story. And keep in mind, dichotomy is a theme, but I do have a night shift question that I'm going to ask you both. So, that's the first part of the story. Now, should I read you the second part?
All right.
Okay. This is from the same publication. Same publication. Now, that article I read to you was from January 18th. Here's an article from the same publication, October 15th, 2017.
Okay.
A new study shows that students learn way more effectively from print textbooks than screens.
I knew it.
Now, okay, this is from 2017. Now, the article goes on to say, today students see themselves as digital natives. The first generation grew up surrounded by technology like smartphones, tablets, and e-readers. Teachers, parents, and policymakers certainly acknowledge the growing influence of technology and have responded in kind. We've seen more investment in classroom technologies, with students now equipped with school-issued iPads and access to e-textbooks. In 2009, California passed a law requiring that all college textbooks be available in electronic form by 2020. In 2011, Florida lawmakers passed legislation requiring public schools to convert their textbooks to digital versions.
That is so foul.
Given this trend, teachers, students, parents, and policymakers might assume that students' familiarity and preference for technology translates into better learning. But we found out that that's not necessarily true. Researchers in learning and text comprehension. As researchers in learning and text comprehension, our recent work has focused on differences between reading print and digital media. While new forms of classroom technology like digital textbooks are more accessible and portable, it would be wrong to assume that students will automatically be better served by digital reading simply because they prefer it. Speed at a cost. Our work has revealed a significant discrepancy. Students say they prefer to perform better when reading on screens, but their actual performance tended to suffer. So, and it says, for example, from research that was done since 1992, they found out that students were able to better comprehend information in print for large texts were more than a page in length. This appeared to be related to the disruptive effect that scrolling has on comprehension. Let that stay with you for a second there, okay? We're also surprised to learn that few researchers tested different levels of comprehension or documented reading time in their studies of printed and digital texts. To explore these patterns further, they conducted three studies that explored college students' ability to comprehend information on paper and from screens. So, I'm going to just read the highlights from the study. And here's what the highlights were. Students were overwhelmed, preferring to read digitally. Reading was significantly faster online than in print. Students judged their comprehension better online than in print, but paradoxically, overall comprehension was better for print versus digital reading. The medium didn't matter for general questions like understanding the main idea of the text, but when it came to specific questions, comprehension was significantly better when participants read printed texts. Now, here's the thing. Now, article goes on for a while. It breaks it all down. I'm just going to give you the headlines from how it breaks down. So it's consider the purpose, analyze the task, slow it down. Some things can't be measured. They're talking about environmental and economic reasons to go paperless. But there's something important that's going to be lost with print's demise. And it says, in our academic lives, we have books and articles we regularly return to. The dog-eared pages of these treasured readings contain lines of text etched with questions or reflections. It's difficult to imagine a similar level of engagement with digital text. So, annotations. So, what are your thoughts there, librarian, on this whole thing? Now, two questions here. What are your thoughts overall, and why do you think 2 years ago it was proven?
Okay, look at the... What school is it again? Tech.
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
Okay.
Tech.
Okay.
It's not like a great humanities school where they care
tech
about poetry.
Tech is humanity. What about the humanity of tech?
What about the poets?
Okay.
What about the writers?
They're digital poets.
I don't know. I just feel that the books are beautiful. What did my dad say when the Jews start... doing their, instead of using a scroll or a book, they start using an iPad, then he'll know it's over for books. But they're still performing their, services at the Sabbath with books and scrolls.
Like
not, they're not, bringing iPads into the temple yet.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there are pastors that do their sermons from iPads.
You think so? Pastors. Not rabbis,
okay.
Pastors.
Sorry. Okay, yeah.
So
probably.
When the ancient culture of Judaism switches over to iPads, throws out their scrolls.
I've seen classical musicians use an iPad on a stand to read their music.
Yeah, that's been happening too.
I guess I am a dinosaur. I do like Prince, and it's more romantic also. Mm. And Book of Eli.
I'm curious as to what people would think. I'll give out the phone number.
You've seen the Book of Eli, right?
Book of Eli, yes. So,
we've all seen the Book of Eli.
I don't know if
for those of us who haven't.
Book of Eli, but,
When the apocalypse comes, there will not be all this technology, but there will still be books.
Yeah, but there'll
just
be some
blackout. You can read your book by candlelight,
but there'll
but
be
you
some
won't
guy.
Be able to
there'll be some guy.
Access the internet or
some guy who dirty guy will sell you some battery power.
Oh, God.
Well, that's true. He does have it. He does have his. iPod, doesn't he, in Book of Eli?
Of course he does.
But what's the most important thing?
Just like you and Eugene have your iPod.
The book is the most important thing.
Well, you know, okay, now what's your take, Eugene, on the whole book versus digital? Because I know you're a partial, I have two partial Luddites, so I just want you, ladies and gentlemen, to know I've stacked the deck here with partial Luddites. They've never met, but they're meeting here. They both, now here, this is the surreal part for me. They both have flip phones. Okay, flip phones. That means no smartphone. I won't say anything about the owners for that. No smartphone, flip phones. And they have what I call fake iPhones. They have iPods that they, when they're near Wi-Fi, they can pretend they're part of the regular population. Okay, that's just,
it's an iPod Touch.
An iPod Touch. Ooh.
Can I just say that many years ago, Bell Hooks, Bell Hooks, right?
Yes, I do.
She wasn't talking about smartphones. She was talking about regular telephones. And she said the telephone is a technology of alienation. Mm. It is not a substitute for this.
I agree with you. Contact for hanging out. I can't disagree. The
flip phone is like to send a text like, what time you want to meet up? Okay, and I'll see you at Barnes & Noble, 6:15. Okay, so that is what the flip phone is for.
That's right.
It's not like to conduct an entire relationship.
We should separate those things. That's what we're doing.
Is this part of the...
We're not going to give the whole thing away, Mike.
Do you guys say this at your meetings and stuff? Is this... will she be speaking at the next meeting?
It's fine to communicate digitally or whatever through Facebook, but it's not really a substitute for going out to lunch, having tea, hanging out.
No, I agree, obviously.
Walk together.
But what about FaceTime? I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, all right, no, then you have to put on makeup. Like, I hate that. I hate it. I hate Skype.
Right, you know what? I have to agree with Jennifer on the part of it. I like books, but I think that sometimes technology is forced upon us.
Yes.
To make you think that this is a new thing, it's forced upon us. If you take away books, it's like when they took away LPs. They took them away.
Did they take them away from you, Eugene?
They didn't take mine away. Of course not.
Of course, they couldn't take your LPs, could they?
They couldn't take my LPs. They forced the public. If you don't have them, you can't buy them. So they forced the public to go with CDs. They took CDs away. Do you see what I'm saying? So you can't do it.
Did they take your CDs away?
They didn't get yours, did they?
I knew it.
And what did they say?
I knew they didn't get your CDs.
But you know, if you take the books away and they say, well, you can't, we're forcing you.
Okay. Okay.
To go digital. People should be able to have a choice.
Well, they do have a choice. You have a choice.
Well, if you take the books away, you kept your LPs.
You could have a record player. You could still have like a tube amp, and you could be happening. You know, if you wanted, you could still. And as a matter of fact, vinyl has made a comeback. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it only made a comeback because
in
the record companies aren't making any money.
Listen, Polaroids have made a comeback. Everything old is new again. And that is still the show here in WBAI.
I think people find books quaint and young people.
Well, bookstores are on the rise. That's the other thing. Bookstores, all the major... I met Eugene.
That's debatable.
I met Eugene working at a bookstore. That's how I met this man.
We both hated it, but...
I'm working at a bookstore as a college student. Hello, you're on the air. Who's this? Yes? Who is this? Wait, sir. Sir, you need to identify yourself before you just start talking.
I'm the mystery caller.
All right, now I hear you, and you were like the mystery muffled caller. All right, so go ahead.
I want a very old technology. apologies. Call Pepper Wire.
I understand.
There you go.
It's like a Dixie cup with a string.
Yeah, something like that. I'm literally cupping my hand around the 1960-something.
I'll be honest with you, sir. It sounds like it. It just sounds like you got the Distortion King 3000 phone. All right, so go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Speaking of phones, Motorola, which is now being acquired by a Japanese company, is re-releasing a flip phone. It's a new technology that makes the screen flexible.
I heard about that.
Oh, yeah. I did hear about that.
You read that, right?
That's the future.
$1,500.
Yeah. Of course. But listen, the future, a phone that folds up and opens up bigger, that's the future. That's what people want.
Yeah, I guess that's what people want. But I just thought that it was funny because you were talking of the flip phones in a different context.
Mm-hmm. Listen.
And the other thing is the lady mentioned scrolls and books. And have you noticed that scrolling comes from scrolls and that the information is organized in completely different ways on a book where you actually flip the pages? And the scroll, whence the computerese term scrolling comes from, you know, it is in fact in the same way.
That's right.
Granted that the screen is not illuminated on a parchment, but, you know, you see the information from top to bottom, and you can go back and forth. Now, personally, I am partial to the book. I think that our entire civilization is paper-based because that's how the culture has been propagated for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, whether the quotient of retention of information that one reads one way or the other, civilization is going to hell in a handbasket regardless. Because there is a great movie that I'm sure you're all familiar with there that is called Idiocracy,
mm-hmm.
that at the beginning studies the IQ precipitation in the general population over the course of 500 hypothetical centuries that the movie covers. Halfway through that movie, after the second or third viewing, I said, wait a minute, this is not about the future, this is about the present, mm-hmm. this is about now. And I don't think that we can do anything to stop that. It's a sad thing, but that's my observation. Any questions or comments? You can also take them off.
It's funny, when Trump won, Comedy Central just played Idiocracy over and over for a 24-hour period.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Because guess what? I don't have a TV.
Listen, I don't have a TV.
But anyone who doesn't know the premise, a librarian, actually, gets...
What are your favorite movies?
He gets frozen, and I guess he winds up in the future where a wrestler is president, right?
Yes, well, it's a conjoining of several different cultural stereotypes. One can be a wrestler, yes.
Funny.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, the librarian is basically the opposite of the librarian because he's in the military, and what he loves about his job is that he's hiding and doesn't have to do anything but watch TV.
But he's like of mediocre intellect, but in the future, he's the smartest person on Earth.
Yes, exactly.
Because everybody's IQ is...
That's exactly it, yes.
Speaking of IQ, I have a story for Eugene to read. This is definitely... And I saw this story actually in a meme it was a painting of Uncle Sam with bulging muscles and young, looking like he's about to punch somebody out, and it said, how Americans see America.
Mm.
And then it said how the other 196 countries see America. And it had a screenshot of this story.
Yeah, this is the one I wanted to talk about.
You can read that out loud.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure it's not getting any better.
Now, this is life is like science fiction. So go ahead.
It's crazy. There was a man in Arkansas who he tries to trade a kidnapped baby for 15 Big Macs at McDonald's. You believe this? Only in America, folks.
Yeah, it is.
A 3-month-old baby had been reunited with her parents after being kidnapped by a man at Riverfront Park in Little Rock, Arkansas. There are not many details on how the man acquired the baby at the park. That would be interesting to know.
The thing that's different,
however,
about a Vrbo vacation home
is what he did with the baby after he kidnapped her that has the community shocked. According to the employees at McDonald's, a heavyset man, 45 years old, Henry Osterman, entered the restaurant on Monday around 2:30 p.m. with a baby wrapped in a blanket. He seemed a bit nervous and told the employee at the cash register that he had the munchies as he ordered 15 Big Macs. According to reports, when the cashier gave him his total, he handed the baby over to her. She said, I looked at him and I said, what do you think I'm going to do with that? She said, Cassandra Wilkins, head cashier at the Little Rock McDonald's, he told me he didn't have any money, but I could take the baby. I said, fool, you need to back the up.
She said, fool.
She said, fool, and she said, you need to back the F up. And that's when he threw the baby at me, ran behind the cash register, grabbed every burger on the food warmer. And she said that white man was crazy.
If we want to look on the bright side of things, he was so hungry, at least he didn't eat the baby. Can't we just look on the bright side?
Let him continue the story.
Well,
and also, maybe that's how the Big Macs got served at the White House.
He was on an errand for the president.
all the way from Arkansas.
There it is.
You need more than 15, though.
Exactly.
Okay, now two employees stepped into action and tackled the would-be hamburglar, as they called him. Unfortunately, the size of the man was too much for the employees to take him down. And that's when an eyewitness said a third employee, Todd Williams, clotheslined a man with a broom handle and took him down to the ground.
Clothesline.
Yes.
What is that?
Well, clothesline is when you like. Okay, so he had like a broom, you know, mm-hmm. He kind of got him clotheslined at the bottom to knock him out.
They call that clotheslining?
Yeah. It's kind of a football term.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Mike, you see? He said, that was a big dude, Williams said. I grabbed the broom, swung it real hard, cracked that punk in the neck, and he fell to the floor. Knocked him out clean, you know. So, hey, this is. Okay, so the police had searched his van, cargo van, his 1972 cargo van that was parked in the McDonald's driveway, and they discovered another infant strapped into the car seat, approximately 6 months old. This guy's got a thing for babies, man.
Well, I think that was for the fries.
They also recovered, now what a surprise, several firearms, knives, neatly displayed collection of baby toys, bottles, and other baby-related items. They also recovered several rolls of duct tape, ropes, and all kinds of stuff. The man was taken into custody for kidnapping. He's currently being held on just an $800 bond. For kidnapping? Come on. What? $800?
Well, if he didn't have money for the Big Mac, you know,
it's a good chance that, you know.
I do love that special sauce, even though I don't eat meat anymore.
You like
I do like the special sauce.
I see.
I'll trade my firstborn.
See what people
eat. She was right, because, you know, at least he didn't eat the baby.
Oh, God. See what people do for fast food? Fast food.
How does eat the baby even come into the equation?
Well, he was hungry enough.
Yeah, but come on. How do you become a cannibal? Hello, you on the air.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, who's this?
I'd rather be anonymous, if that's okay.
Yeah, well, you got to make up a name then, sir. You got to be creative.
Hey, you could Freddy. Say,
man.
Al Nonimo.
Al Nonimo. I'll just call you Al. We're just going to call you Al.
We can call you Al. We'll call you Al.
He's like, I'm anonymous, but I have no imagination. All right, so talk to me now. What did you call
say? I want to lay something on you guys that is a little controversial.
Okay.
Supposedly, you were just joking about the baby. That is a true story, or is that?
It is a true story.
That's not a joke,
right? That's a true story.
Yes. Sadly.
Now, supposedly, there is. Now, don't get too grossed out, and this is something that I researched and learned.
Okay,
that there is actually human flesh. They've done DNA tests on McDonald's and other fast food, that there is human DNA in there.
Oh,
and that there's fetal tissue in certain sodas to make it more flavorful.
Oh, come on.
Where did they get all this stuff? I've heard all this.
Yeah, but where did they get it from?
Where they get it from?
Fetal tissues? I mean,
placenta. Well, they have placenta parties where the women eat the placenta.
They have placenta. Yeah, they do. But you know, let me just say that there are all kinds of stories out there about all kinds of things. And, you know, unless you really do the research like this guy says he does, it's hard to really, you know, you want to see how those dots connected, you know. And who started
it? Do you?
Yeah, I do. Well, not really, actually. But, okay, speaking of what he's talking about.
On this note, I'm checking out of the abattoir.
Okay, you're going to continue to listen. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You.
All right, the phone number here, and I'm going to talk about the theme. Since you're here, Al, I'll ask you the theme. And because I do want to ask Jennifer and Eugene and keep this theme in mind. Because we are in a very crazy time. You know, and life can get pretty crazy. So my question to you, Eugene.
To me.
To you first, and then to Al, is what brings you back to you? Like, I started this question last week, and we only really started it towards the end of the show. So the question is, what brings you back to you? Is it a song? Is it a movie? Like,
what brings me back?
What brings you back to yourself? Back to you remembering, like, okay, this is part of how you became who you are. This takes you right back. It kind of regrounds you almost. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
It could be a song, could be a movie.
Yeah, I do.
Could be. Oh, you
yeah.
do. All right. Now I'll let Eugene answer, and then I want you to answer. Go ahead.
Well, for most of you out there, Mike knows that I've been a musician for years, and that's kind of the grounding thing for me. And this is interesting because it's going to be the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. And I'll briefly say to you, when I was starting to learn guitar way back in high school or whatever it was, I saw the movie. I saw the movie Woodstock for the first time. I didn't know anything about it. I was too young to go, of course, and I saw the movie. And
the first time I saw it, by the way, was in the Omega Man.
Oh, okay. So I was so enlightened by the movie, it just changed my life. Politically, musically. It just changed my life. I walked out the movie theater being a whole different person. So anyway, I started playing music anyway. But that's what grounds it comes back to me when I play music. I can have a terrible day, I can do this and do that, but once I can play music with my band or something like that, there's no harm done. There's nothing you can do. I'm bulletproof.
That's the name of your first album, No Harm Done. You are tuned still to listener-sponsored radio WBAI, and hopefully you're enjoying this encore presentation of an episode of Night Shift from back in 2019. So, the things that you're hearing are things that we were talking about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, predicting what would be the future. Now that we're in the future, playing the past, talking about the future that we're in, hopefully you're embracing that life is like science fiction. And you want to make a pledge. You're like, I love this show. Eugene, Jennifer, Mike. I heard Mike from Jersey earlier. Oh, my God, I got a pledge. 212-209-2950. Make a pledge right now in the name of Night Shift. You can become a WBAI buddy. It's only $25 a month. That's what we need. That's what I need. This is what we need. You can't hear him. He's in the background. But, yes, we all need this. So, 212-209-2950, or you can go to WBAI.org, put in Night Shift, and you can pledge. And now back to this vintage
episode of Night Shift. Sorry, I had to just get a little bit of, you know, I love Eugene in the background. I said, who is this? Sounds like me. All right, so I thought it was a perfect thing to play during your piece here. So, Al, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Part of that riff, I love that song. Part of that riff sounded, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember. Remember Mission Impossible?
Of course. Definitely. He went right into a Mission Impossible riff right in there. Yes, it was.
On purpose.
That was my take on it, that he went and did it on purpose. Yes, come on. Yes,
yeah,
I do.
That sounded just like that, which yes, I used to love that show.
Sure.
And you said what grounds you. I mean, if we could rap a little bit, I hope we're not on a time schedule. When you say what grounds you really don't know what's in ground beef. And, you know, early on in the days when they said, you know, the jungle, they said people working in meat factories, like if somebody lost a hand, they wouldn't go take it out. That would just be part of the hot dogs or whatever. And the fact that we could use a pig valve and we could use a cow's for inoculation, you know, we're not too far. You know, this is the concept. I'm not a vegetarian. I tried to be a vegetarian, and there's different theories on that. Yep. But that's not too far from a human.
Are you trying to convince us that there could be all kinds of things in the meat? I mean, if that's your plan, I get it. But
even if there's not human flesh in foods or fetal tissue in sodas. There's a lot of scary things going on.
No doubt. And then what? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? We cover this on the show all the time. It's more than scary. That's a whole other show. And believe me, if you keep listening to the show, I will cover that kind of thing. You know, I don't have anything specific on that right now. I do, though. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because we will come back to this because I do have something. You know, there's an increasing trend right now. And I'm going to give to some dichotomy here. It's part of the dichotomy that we're going to talk about this morning. Increasing trend for vegetarianism, which you probably are aware of, and we're going to talk about that. But I do want to stay on target here, if you're going to hang. And you have to tell me what brings you back to you, unless you want to pass on that question and I could let somebody else
answer.
Well,
first of all, I'm glad you're on a little earlier because I have listened to the show, but this is a much better time.
Okay.
You guys are on earlier, and it's a little bit easier to listen.
I understand.
Earlier.
You're awake. It's hard. It's easier to listen when you're awake. I often find it easier to listen when I'm awake.
But I did pick up the show a little late. What is the actual topic?
Well, there's a theme. The theme is dichotomy. So a lot of the stories we're going to cover this morning, you're going to wonder, okay, we're going there. But then what's the dichotomy? And I give you the dichotomy, like the fact that 2 years ago they established that, you know, we learn better from books, but 2 years later, they've gotten rid of 95% of the books at this college, and it's the beginning of what they call Library Next Project. So it's where we're headed, and they talk about how people think they're comprehending more, they feel they're doing better, and they prefer it, and they read faster, but they're not comprehending it. They're not understanding it. And the interesting thing that Jennifer said contextually is she quoted Bell Hooks saying how smartphones are...
Even smartphones. She was talking about landlines.
Just the alienation of, like, you know, our understanding of who and what we are. That's how life is like science fiction. So that's the theme of the show. Now, the question, though, the Night Shift question, and which is Eugene answered, what brings you back to you? Because in all this craziness, in this dichotomy of surreality that we live in, what brings you back to you? For Eugene, it's playing music or hearing people that sound like him. Like, I just had brought him back to himself just then. Yes, I did. So, and I want to ask Jennifer, but I want to ask you first, Al.
You're welcome to stay.
When you say what brings me back, you mean what keeps me, like, relaxed? Or what do you mean?
No, no, no. Okay, if you don't understand yet, I'm going to let somebody else answer. And
No. Please, you'll stay a little bit more.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm just thinking I can let you learn by example. But what I mean, and maybe there are others out there going, yeah, what the hell is Mike talking about? Well, like Eugene said, you know, what things bring you back to you? There for me, there are certain movies, certain music I can listen to. And sometimes I'll listen. For me, there's definitely a lot of music because I listen to a lot of music, you know, in my formative years, you know, and music is a big part of my life. And there's certain music I can listen to that it takes me back to a place of you know discovery and you know just being starts to contextualize my life for me and it brings me back to me. You know, there are different things that I can do like Eugene says, you know, creatively that can do that, but definitely an easy conversation is music. So Jennifer, I'm going to ask you, so you think about it. But Al, so I'm saying for you, Al, is there, sometimes it could be a movie. You know, there's certain movies that could if I sit and watch this movie, I'm like, yeah. You know, wow. Like,
could be a book.
It could be a book. Yes, there are certain books that I read several times that if I were to get into that book, that like, wow, okay. I could not only enjoy the book or the art or the song. I am reminded of myself. Do you have anything like that, Al?
Yeah, I love music. I love going to the beach, even if it's cold. I love the beach. The beach to me is like a really beautiful. I love reading, but what you mentioned before, I don't like reading anything on a screen. I really rather read a newspaper. I'd rather read the book.
Yeah. Hey, you gained a couple of fans there, just so you know.
Yeah, because even in the newspaper, like, I'll read the newspaper and there might not be an article that I want to read, but it will catch my eye. When you're reading it on one of those screens, you really don't get the full page and the other pages. And I don't know, there's just something meditative. Now, the new generation definitely is being groomed to only have video or screens to experience that. And I think that's an interesting experiment on, do we learn better? And what is, you know, the real way to learn through, you know, I mean, I go on the internet, I do like doing that, but even that, I'll look up something on YouTube and then there'll be like a sort of similar type of subject and I'll say, oh, that looks interesting, let me read that, or it corresponds to something I'm looking up. So in a sense, you know, I'm not against the idea of learning through a video or a screen, but
Let me ask you a question, Jennifer. Do you consider yourself to be a vegetarian or are you a vegetarian?
I'm vegetarian.
You are vegetarian. Now, why are you a vegetarian?
My sister is a very influential
force.
She's actually vegan. So I've met her halfway.
Wow.
If she tells you about the suffering of these animals, will be convinced.
Let me just tell you something, okay? It's interesting you say that, and I'm going to definitely do a show on this because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. I'm going to have you read this story about the planetary diet and this push towards vegetarianism and the dichotomy of that. Hello, you're on the air.
How long have you been?
Hello.
Yeah, I guess you guys got still the phone. Are you cutting me off to get to a new call?
No. Just pausing you. Hello, you there, sir? What'd you say?
Good evening, Steve from New Jersey. It's kind of scary when I heard beginning of the show when you said that they're getting rid of all the books.
Yes.
Well, I guess it goes in line with a 1970 Kerner Commission report that David Rockefeller wrote up that they said these people that are protesting the Vietnam War and civil rights and women's rights and all this, they're getting too smart. You got to dumb them down. And that's what they wanted in America. And I guess now they're trying to dumb it down even more. with idiots like Amazon coming in with robots and drones and all that.
I'll take a
paperback or a hardcover book anytime.
I'm with you. 2 hours ago, my girlfriend.
Yeah. Found a book I had as a kid called The Big Book of Trucks from 1955 by George Zappo, and she ordered it for my old girlfriend for her daughter's new baby boy.
Nice.
So he's going to have that book forever like I got it, mine, you know?
Listen, I love that. I love that.
You'll never see that on a computer.
There is a lot to be said to tactile. You know, I tell you this. I do miss albums for the album cover art. You know, CDs were like, oh, they're small. Now it's just like whatever you see online. You know, there's nothing like, and I'm aging myself, but listening to music and then holding the album in your arm and looking at the liner notes.
It's one of the ones that would open up.
And, you know,
some had posters.
Is Chris, are you there? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I mean, the gatefold is what the album is.
Gatefold. Yes, come on. Come on. Do you miss that or not?
It's so crazy.
But your guy Chris missed out on one thing, though.
What?
Chris missed out on one thing when he was talking about getting rid of the LPs, right? They took his LPs, right?
That was Eugene,
because
not Chris.
To me, it went from LPs to 8-track tapes, to cassette tapes, then the CDs, back to albums again.
Yeah.
Because of the quality.
Yeah.
Just like Kodak now is making Kodachrome and Extrachrome filming and developing it again, because National Geographic can't get the quality of the pictures in the analog or digital. They got to have analog.
Let's see, what's new is old. What's old is new again.
Everything's old is new again. Yeah. Yes, there it is.
Hey, so real quick, I know other people are calling.
Yes.
You said, what makes you go back to you, right?
Yeah, yes.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm like a tree service, like a tree climber guy in New Jersey.
Okay.
But I work with a forest fire service, like part-time. And to me, when we're landing out on the Pacific Coast Trail in California on a helicopter coming down with our chainsaws and stuff into them fires, there ain't nothing like it in the world, man.
Wow. All right.
But anyway,
yes.
You folks have a wonderful night.
You too.
And have a great week.
And thank you for that image.
Yes.
Yes.
That's great.
Exactly.
That's great.
I need to...
Keep up the great show.
Thank you.
That was exactly what we're looking for.
All right, Chris, you got to tell me, because I think we started.
Is this Chris? Chris?
This is Chris. Chris?
Yes.
This is Chris. Chris.
Chris.
Chris. Chris.
What's happening, my brother? How are you?
Oh, man? I'm good, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy everything.
Wow.
Happy Mother's King Day. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there listening. Yeah, it was when I heard your voice, I started smiling.
Oh man, it's always good that you're still, you know, part of the show.
You're still alive.
Yeah, you are.
He's still alive.
I'm always in the ether, man.
It's good to hear, man. Good to hear.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Cool. Yeah, Mike. So, yeah, records, man. Well, you know, records are making a comeback at the show.
Yes, they are. I was telling this album, to Eugene.
Albums sell really well. I mean, you can get between $5 and $10 for certain albums.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Not only, and that's old albums. This year, because I'm on all these voting committees and the BFCA, and they send me all the same stuff that they send, you know, the Oscar committee. And they send tons and tons of stuff and, you know, look at our film. I can't tell you how many. I must have gotten at least 10 LPs.
No way.
LPs.
Yeah.
LPs. Okay? I got an LP for Black Panther.
Oh, my God.
For Stars Born. All that stuff. Bohemian Rhapsody. Exactly. All of that. So, it definitely.
Wow.
So then
you just broke out your turntable and started playing it.
No, I wish. I don't have my turntable.
I have a turntable. I still
want it. You have a turntable?
Yes, it still works.
Give it to me.
I play my albums once in a while.
That's right, because they didn't take your LPs.
I kept mine. Well, most of them, anyway.
You didn't, Mike, you didn't have that Radio Shack turntable? You don't still have that?
No. I spent good money on a turntable.
Panasonic.
Oh, please. I had one of those ridiculously expensive, you know, with the water thing and it goes around.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah. Shoot.
Wow.
I had that whole thing happening.
Could I give you guys a profound thought?
All right, yes.
That's
please.
Segue to the last caller?
Of course.
Okay.
you talk about dichotomy. I don't know if it kind of came to your thoughts, but, you know, Amazon is the biggest corporation and Bezos is the richest guy now. Yet the Amazon rainforest is becoming poorer and poorer. More depleted.
Yes, yes.
The guy who's the new president.
That is a dichotomy. Thank you. Eugene, are you understanding now what
that,
a dichotomy
yes.
is now?
Yes, yes. Way to
Thank
go,
you.
Chris.
Thank you.
You
that
very
wasn't
much.
Chris. That was Al.
Oh, that was Al. I'm
was
sorry.
Al.
I couldn't hear.
That was Al. Why can't you hear? Turn up your microphone. I mean, your headphones.
I'll just turn it up on
TV. Yeah, just turn it up on whatever one you're on.
Oh, got it.
Okay, do you hear yourself now? Okay, now you can hear yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Al. That was very good. That was very good. Chris, I do have a question for you, though. You were going to tell me what brings you back to you?
Oh, yeah. I think the theme of late, but, you know, White Castle or Jack in the Box?
Stop. Get out of here.
Oh, I love it.
What are you
talking about?
I love it.
That's pretty real, though.
If I'm driving down to the city and I get on 17 and I pass White Castle over there, I got to stop.
There you go.
I love that they have a vegetarian option now, by the way.
You got to be kidding.
They're really good. The veggie sliders at White Castle.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
I love that. I would eat that every night if I could.
That's life is like science fiction.
Are you sure? You guys not serious.
I am totally serious.
Look at Eugene. Eugene's like, is that one in Times Square open now?
I'm dumbfounded.
Is there one in Times Square?
Yeah, of course there's
what?
One in Times
Square.
Didn't know that
it's been there for like forever.
No.
Forever.
Where?
What are you talking
ever.
About? There's
no.
one in the Bronx, that's all I know.
Oh,
no.
You're kidding?
What are you
kidding?
Talking
you're right.
About?
Okay, hold on.
I don't know any White Castle in Times
How
Square.
How could
you
not know? It's been there for at least 15 years.
No, that's not true.
All right.
It's 9th Avenue or 8th Avenue.
It's 8th Avenue, right, exactly. And 40th Street. Right
no.
here where the what used to be the music building.
All right, when we leave here, we're going there.
Exactly.
and the White Castle in the Bronx is White Point Thrill for up the boulevard, and that's where I grew up. So I'm very familiar with the White Castle over there.
And the Belmont area, right? Around there?
No, there might be one out over that one. I think there's also one in Westchester Square, but I haven't been up in the Bronx in a long time, so I'm not sure if that one's
me neither.
Somebody out there's listening, maybe they know where the rest of them are, but you know, it's consistent food, unfortunately.
I'm still freaking out that they have a vegetarian.
Well, first
menu.
Of all, there are three White Castles in Manhattan. Let me just tell you.
It's
okay, there's
so
three
much
of them.
Fun.
There's three of them. There's one on 103rd Street. There's one
on
yes,
the east side.
On the east side.
Wait,
yes,
what?
On the
oh, east
side,
okay.
east. And then there's one on 8th Avenue, 525 8th Avenue, which is like 40th Street and 8th Avenue. I don't know how you get past that.
Oh my god.
Okay, that White
I'm
Castle. And then there's one up in Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard,
yeah.
in Harlem, of course.
No, that
That's
one,
on
yes.
120.
That one I know.
So, I mean, you know, there's three.
Okay.
So there's no excuse for you not to destroy your body. Okay.
There's no Jack in the Box. That's the one I love.
Jack in the Box.
You know, they never got over the horse meat scandal.
I was out of town, I think, going to visit my sister, and I passed an Arthur Treacher's. I thought they were gone.
Love it. Love it.
That's
what
a
was
blast from the past
again?
There.
What was
that
about?
Jack in the Box, it was just something that was, you know, it was the icon was a Jack in the Box. It's like, surprise,
right.
You've got health issues. You know.
They had a horse meat scandal. Oh, no, can't
No, what was
meat.
Good about Jack in the Box is...
Something crazy.
Jack in the Box had Taco Tuesday, which you bought one taco, you got one free. So
they sell tacos.
Tacos.
And they had super tacos, which were just really bad, but really tasted amazing. And you know, whatever. I haven't had it.
All right, so basically, you're saying junk food brings you back, is what you're saying.
No, just those two foods.
Like
other
Taco
than that,
Bell.
It would be, you know, it would be listening to certain music or you know, obviously listening to, I could talk to some jazz stuff, and I'm right back, like, where Eugene is.
Is there one song, is there one jazz song that just, like, yeah. Anytime you hear it.
Oh, I have a story.
There's a lot of different. There's a lot of different. You know, you could say, you know, Mob Vision Orchestra stuff with John McLaughlin.
Yeah.
You know, any of those albums, but any of the jazz stuff. It's all in my head so much that if I hear just a couple of chords of it, I know it's something that'll take me back. That's for sure something. Music, definitely, without a doubt, can take me back and put me in a really good mood and energize me and
and give me a lot of spiritually grounding to and a lot of positiveness into my head by listening to certain music, for sure, and especially stuff that I grew up listening to.
By Duke Ellington and John Coltrane.
Oh yeah, Coltrane, any Coltrane stuff.
I have a funny story about that. I was walking in Midtown Manhattan, right, and I saw this guy playing the saxophone. He was playing God Bless America, and he had a sign up that said, ask me to play anything, I'll play it for you, right, to get money or whatever. So I'm walking by and he's playing God Bless America, and I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to hear I'm in a Sentimental Mood. But this guy won't know it because he only knows crowd-pleasing, you know, American anthem kind of songs. He won't even know In a Sentimental Mood. Just as I'm having that thought, he stops right in the middle of playing God Bless America, stops right in the middle, and starts playing In a Sentimental Mood.
Whoa.
Is that insane? Because a lot of musicians are intuitive. And he knew if I stop right now and I play In a Sentimental Mood, I don't know why, but someone's going to give me money. Isn't that crazy? So
you think so?
I came over to him and I said, I was just thinking of In a Sentimental Mood, and you stopped what you were playing and you started playing it. I just can't believe it. And he's like, oh, sometimes I do that. You know, and I, of course, gave him money.
Of course.
It was one of those New York moments.
I have an alternative theory to that.
Well, Rupert Sheldrake, my family is like my sister, and my dad like him.
Okay.
He says that there's, you know, thoughts are in the air.
I agree with that completely. But knowing you, as long as I've known you, I have my own views on you.
Oh, yeah?
Why that happens to you.
I had something like that happen.
All right, what happened to you? Talk to me, Eugene. What happened to you?
No, it was just a coincidence. I was coming from a gig, and a guy was driving us to Grand Central. So he had, like, a Billy Joel station on.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about Billy Joel and getting tickets and all that stuff. And then I just said to him, what's your favorite Billy Joel song? And he said, Lena. That's my favorite song. So we're riding along, and then the song comes on.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Oh. We went like this. We went,
that's
see?
Amazing.
We wished that, you
that's
know.
That's crazy.
Come on, that's yeah, what I'm saying. Yeah. That was like, okay.
Stuff like that happens.
One of those moments.
Are you going to talk about like the movies that bring you back to you?
Yeah,
for me,
movie?
It's Repo Man.
Repo Man?
And do you Does remember bring in you back Repo Man? You? Yes. Do you remember in Repo Man, the little crazy little guy?
Oh, man.
He says, say you're thinking about a plate of shrimp, and all of a sudden someone says plate or shrimp or plate of shrimp. No explanation for it, no point in looking for one either. So that's become a part of our vocabulary in my friends and family. We'd say, I just had a plate of shrimp. I just had a plate of shrimp. So I had a plate of shrimp with that street musician.
That was,
you know, that's one of my favorite plates of shrimp that I've had.
Alright, I'm sorry, I got Salif Keita.
You know, Mike, it reminds me of one time you and I were in a cab together and you and I were talking, and then the guy turned around and goes, are you Mike and Chris from the radio?
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
No way.
Hilarious.
Look at that.
I've had a couple funny stories like that where people recognize my voice and they're cab drivers, so it's kind of funny. But yes, that's so funny. I remember that very vividly, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird because it definitely blew my mind.
I know. The cab driver's like, I got celebrities in my car.
No, man, no celebrities, but definitely, a lot of cab drivers listen to VAI, and we're fortunate to have
good
them.
To know.
Yeah, sweet. We've had a few listeners who became, who helped, who would drive us home sometimes.
And wow.
Those are cool. Years, yes. Of course, if there are any cab drivers listening now that want to become,
feel free. If you're a fan, you want to give us free rides to Manhattan.
We're in Brooklyn. We'll be off in about 45 minutes. But you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift, and here we give you a mix of things to hopefully you're a little bit smarter when you wake up.
Ate bala mo matijuya, salama ya robeni maidumanye, moso ya robeni lele mashiri dini jeli mani. Kanule nindi, ate bala mo matijuya, salama ya robeni maidumanye. Moso yaro benni lele ma shiri dini jeli mani kanana maluya
ala no namo somani
kanana maluya
ala no shiri jeli mani
kanana maluya
ala no lela mosomani
kanana maluya
ala no shiri jeli mani.
You know, this is a interesting soundtrack by a musician called Steve Hillage and Salif Keita.
I like that. African. I Love Tomorrow.
What's that?
One of my favorite songs.
Oh, really?
But you can't get on Apple Music. I just discovered.
You're talking about the song that's playing now?
No, the song from Muhammad Ali movie.
Oh, the Muhammad Ali movie. Yes, yes. Yes, hello.
I'm sorry. I love to talk to you guys all night. You guys are fascinating. Is the title Night Shift from that beautiful song Night Shift about Marvin Gaye, which I love that song?
No, I'd like to say that it was, but no. But we could say that it was. No. Basically, Night Shift got its name because we were on the night shift. You had to be, after 8 o'clock crowd, the
way after
late
that.
Shift, way after that. We were on 3:30 a.m. till 6, That was like the night shift's getting off. Well, we got off. And then we were
that's
on
the
for
graveyard shift.
They call it that too.
But then we moved up from the graveyard to the night shift. We were on midnight till 3 a.m. for well over a decade. Well over a decade. And now we're on 10 p.m. to midnight here on Listener Sponsored Radio.
Hey, Mike, is this the Steve Hillage from Gong?
Yes, it's Steve Hillage. Yes, the same Steve Hillage. Yes, it is.
Wow.
Steve Hillage and Sully, right? See, this is why I know Chris. He would actually know who Steve Hillage is.
You know what you said before.
This is from a soundtrack they did. Yes. Yeah. What are you going to say?
Wow, great. Yeah, man, we'll be saying
what you said before. Supposedly we do have psychic ability. The fact that you were thinking of that John Coltrane song.
Yes.
Psychically, you could have transmitted that. Supposedly.
Are you a Rupert Sheldrake fan?
Listen, I totally think. First of all, I've known Jen for a long time. I'm absolutely convinced that she has psychic ability.
Oh, no.
But she doesn't know it, and you could never convince her. That's the irony of.
I don't know where you're getting that.
Okay, I'll give you an example.
When you were walking down the street.
When I was walking down the street. there it is.
That
okay.
is crazy.
Okay, tell the story. Tell the story.
I was sitting in the Hungarian pastry shop on 110th, 111th, and was it Amsterdam? And I was like, who can I call? I'm feeling a little lonely. Who haven't I seen in a while? I said, I'll call Mike Sargent. I haven't seen that guy in months. Talk to him. I start calling him. His phone's ringing and ringing and ringing. I look down Amsterdam, and there he is walking along with his phone ringing in his pocket. I pop up. I'm like, excuse me, I'm calling you at this very moment. And he looks at his phone, and he's like, oh, you're right. You are.
There it is.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
So that can't be a coincidence. Isn't there some serendipity with that?
Well, Rupert Sheldrake thinks that my sister could tell you more about Rupert Sheldrake. That
your sister, the force.
She is the force. She that you know, thoughts are like tangible. They're almost, you can almost touch them, and they float around in the air, and people pick up on them. So I was thinking about Mike, and he's walking down the street. Right, I mean, he doesn't even live in that neighborhood. I don't live in that neighborhood. I haven't talked to him in months. You know, it was just a very odd coincidence. Or plate of shrimp.
See, she has these things happen so much in her life that she has a term for it, but she doesn't believe in it. That's the irony.
But there's no explanation for it. No point in looking for one either.
Exactly. And they just happen all the time. There it is.
Well, there is a book about it by a mathematician who says, statistically, mathematically, there will be a certain amount of these incidents in the universe.
And a lot of them.
If you want to make it all boring.
And a lot of them will pinpoint around you. Statistically, Jennifer is going to have a lot of.
I don't leave the house as much as I used to, but now it happens when I'm watching TV. I have the TV on in the background, and I'm reading a book.
It's following you.
And whatever word I'm reading comes on the TV all of a sudden.
I'm about to agree with Mike that you have superpower.
No, it's, you know what it is? She vibrates at a certain frequency.
Ah.
And she has no idea where she is.
There's too many coincidences.
She doesn't know what she's a part of.
Well, you know, humans supposedly at one time did have amazing abilities. This is how supposedly the pyramids were built. There was supposedly...
Exactly. Now we have Trump. That...
We're going to build a wall.
Exactly.
Not even a pyramid, just a wall.
A that could create monuments to the gods.
Well, that's,
you know,
funny
there
you
is
said
a theory that.
That
Trump
now we have
like
Trump.
A reptilian shapeshifter, and the reptilians took us over and enslaved us. And
well, listen,
how we lost
Byron,
all of our power.
Byron is convinced that evangelicals are actually Satan worshippers, and they don't know it. Byron's convinced. But yeah, what did you say? I'm sorry.
Well, they voted for Satan. I don't know
well,
if they worship
well, they're
him.
Still supporting him, you know. But it doesn't matter. Go ahead, finish what you were saying. Everybody's got their perspective on everything.
Well, think about it. What he was saying about all of these drugs coming through the border, the human compassionate thing would say, you know, we got a lot of sick people, and why are these people needing so many drugs? These people need help, not to be arrested and thrown in a prison, but the idea of it coming through the border. What about the original person that needs this? They're going to get it in through a submarine, a plane, a mule if they have to. With a guy
submarine,
wherever.
Now that's
you know what I'm
that's
saying?
A movie right there.
I you know what? I think that if Trump builds a wall,
mm-hmm.
we should have designers to design it to make it
no listen
artful.
Didn't you see? I put it on the Night Shift Facebook page.
They should let people put.
It's on the Night Shift Facebook page. A Republican came up with a much better idea.
What's that?
He said just have a sensor that just goes the entire length of it. It's a motion sensor. A motion sensor the entire length of it, and then systems built into
Shock value?
Well, not even shock value. Like if something goes across the motion sensor, you know where to send people. It's like, yeah, it's the motion sensor. You don't have to build a wall. He says it's inexpensive. And I put it on the Night Shift Facebook page.
Very science fiction.
NITESHIFT is the Night Shift Facebook
page. Yeah, but, back to your original theme, Mike, you know, having Trump as the president is the dichotomy of what we are right now.
Exactly.
You know.
It is the dichotomy.
Now I understand.
Now you understand.
No. I mean, every day is just another day in, like, the most surreal existence I could exist in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I and not just myself, but everyone that I encounter... they all have this dumbfounded look on their face when the subject comes up. They just, no one understands how this is continuing.
Listen, and it hasn't come to an end.
But you see, that's the life is like science fiction part. The life is like science fiction part is that eventually, you know, like how far can it go? Okay, all right, let's look. You know,
it's already gone 3 years.
You know, I always look at things from like the individual and the larger culture of the humans. You know, as a science fiction fan, but okay, a child will go as far as it can. It'll keep pushing the parents. How much can I get away with? How much can I get away with? And human beings in general, as you've heard me say many times, you know, we just adapt. We can normalize anything. So as more and more craziness happens, that becomes normal. And crazier happens. And that becomes normal. And crazier happens. And that becomes normal. We are now in a situation where if you were to jump back 2 years from now, if you took somebody, plucked them out of 2 years and put them in today, be like, get the hell, they would think they were dreaming. Because it was like, it could be surreal. Not only that he was president, but that every single day. And can I just say for a second, I mean, it's obvious and I'm sure it's been said many times, but our biggest issues are really not the border and immigration. That is really so, you know, small. But the point I'm making is it's that's the point. But it's what dominates the news. It's working. It's the debate. Even the Democrats. That's what they're going at. It's a whole thing.
Should be gun control
and the shutdown and
children
the,
in
the
cages.
Idea Thank that you. The shutdown could be going. Anyway, it's all surreal. We know it. We know it's surreal.
Why has no one been able to break into those places and take photographs of these children?
They know where they are.
Listen, they don't even. There are thousands of children. They don't know where they are. That's a whole other thing.
But Al was saying you can get to the point where, you know, did the reptilians
well, there it is. And who is it? Who's texting you, Jennifer, saying that the evangelicals are Satanists?
Oh, my sister.
Your sister? The Force says that evangelicals are Satanists.
But, you know, I always get on my soapbox. I see it coming to an end. I see within 6 to 8 months, we will not be in the same place we are now. We will be in a better place.
That's very optimistic. I like that.
And there will be like the Mueller Memorial.
We all go for the Mueller Memorial.
Speaking of memorials, what about the Lincoln Memorial and the
I think
Native Americans?
Saw that.
No, but did you see the other side of that? The other side of that? I think that's the least of it. I think, again,
I used to work with the Israelite. What are they called? The Black Israelites?
Yeah. Oh, the Black Israelites. Yeah. Oh, they're intense. They're intense.
Pretty intense.
But you know
he
what?
Was very lovely.
Let's
coworker,
just say
by the way.
They're intense.
Yes, I used to work with
him. How did they allow that?
As time goes
he
on.
He in at work. Although he did hit on this 14-year-old girl. She had to be moved to another library. But he was a very lovely man to work with. He was very mellow, very lovely.
But you were
he got
suspicious.
His yah-yahs out on 42nd Street. You know how they like hang out there?
Yeah, of course.
So they were taunting these, you know, evangelical MAGA kids that were a bunch of jerks, frankly. But
yeah,
like,
I saw the whole thing.
You saw the whole thing, and then the Native Americans.
Yes, and then the Americans. Yes. Yeah, listen, it's all, you know, in writing they tell you that true drama, true conflict is a conflict of ideals. And that's all we're dealing with now, ideals. Drama.
Kids need to read.
The video got picked up and put on, it was a Twitter account out of Brazil, which was now been blocked, that person
is out of context.
Video. Put an out of context statement on it, in the sense of like, you know, look at these losers wearing the hat and blah blah blah, and that started the cycle with that title. Then it then got retweeted and so forth, and that's how we wound up where we are today. And then it got exposed as to being another side of every coin, obviously, which is for everything. There's always two sides. You can take.
But think about what you're saying, though. Think about what you're saying. What you're saying is, standing back, the larger context of what you're saying is that now it's not about news; it's about what gets out there. What gets out there? What goes viral? What gets out there? How's it interpreted? How's it taken?
How's it interpreted?
What gets out there? How's it interpreted? And then you have to get the news reporters. You have to get the investigate. Then it has to be investigated from some sort of, you know, standpoint of like, what is this?
It's funny to watch the coverage between
CNN. But this is the way we are now, where
Yeah.
Anything can become, quote unquote, viral. Anything can become news.
Right, and you don't know. And the thing is, but even with texting somebody, you can interpret a text 10 or 20 different ways.
Oh, yes, that is a problem.
Iliad Nation.
It is a problem. You never know how somebody's saying what they're saying.
Please,
you know,
please.
And we all just accept it.
Listen,
as
don't
the norm
even
now.
Talk to me about interpretation of texts.
That causes so many problems.
Which is ironic to
so
say.
So many problems.
What? You don't understand my texts to you?
No, you fool. Look, he's taking it personally.
What it was a piece.
Okay, but it's true. You misinterpret a lot of stuff. It's tone deaf. It's, you're like, what'd she mean by that? Oh, my God.
That's right.
Exclamation point. It's really, it can be very, can be difficult.
Well, Mike and I will text each other back and forth, and sometimes between Italy, and he probably, is talking to you as well, or just, you get these, where Michael sends you something, he sends me something and I react back or something goes on. And we're just in shock every day about something else. It's just amazing. Just the dichotomy of the world we're living in, again. In general, of just the absurdity of what's going on. Like that guy that wanted to sell his kidnapped somebody and wanted to sell the kid.
The baby for the Big Macs. Yes, that's what we covered that earlier.
15.
Yeah.
Big Macs.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is.
I mean, how America sees itself versus how the rest of the world sees us.
Here's how to get everyone to adopt the planetary health diet.
Planetary health diet. Now, that's a thing now.
The scientists behind the planetary health diet admit that the changes required are radical. Here's what the government and food producers can do to change how we all eat for the better. Getting people to change their behavior is difficult. Just ask any scientist who works in climate change. Similar challenges apply to any dietitian. This week, an international group published a paper proposing a radical new diet as part of a symposium on health and food run by The Lancet. In the report, they say this diet could feed the world's growing population. Estimates put the global population at 10 billion by 2050. That's terrible. That's my editorial. As well as potentially change agricultural practices and stop the Earth from sliding into further environmental devastation. One of the major challenges which this diet would hope to tackle is the role of livestock farming contributing to climate change. Cow farts are bad for the environment.
True.
I learned that years ago in college.
Mm-hmm.
It requires cutting down on unhealthy foods such as red meat and increasing the intakes of grains and vegetables. A detailed breakdown can be found at the Lancet report itself. Roughly, you should be aiming to eat 2,500 calories per day, which is around the general guidance of how much an adult should eat now. The crux of the diet would involve a far greater reliance on beans, lentils for protein. This would form about 75 grams of your daily food intake. You should be cutting down meat consumption to at most
if we...
14 grams of red meat and 29 grams of chicken per day. And excuse me, aiming to have around 500 grams of fruit and vegetables. Want me to keep going?
Just a little bit.
For some, these diets aren't necessarily unusual. For example, vegans already don't eat dairy and rely heavily on vegetables and other kinds of complex carbs for the majority of their food supply. But in order to encourage widespread adoption of these dietary changes, there'd have to be an incentive. Previous research has demonstrated that changing health-related behavior is notoriously difficult. We can all imagine that. In North America, meat is considered a daily staple. In parts of Europe, dairy is. People are slightly influenced by conscious decision-making, such as putting a sustainable label on an item of food, but we actually now know that it doesn't tend to work. The other more effective approach is trying to affect the unconscious decision-making, so increasing cues in the environment and making changes more socially acceptable. One successful example is most likely the five-a-day campaign, which was introduced 15 years ago. The government wanted to change people's diets, particularly young people. Simply knowing something is better for us is often not enough to increase acceptability of certain practices, example, cutting out meat, or doesn't give us the right incentives to make a change. In reality, information about how bad our agricultural practices are for the planet, for example, or the impact of climate change on our local environment, a lot of this information is widely publicized and easy to find. Health campaigns and government intervention has tried to change in packing, such as adding emissions or miles traveled by an item in order to make individual consumers consider what they're buying more carefully.
Okay. Now you can stop right there.
Okay.
Thoughts? And how long is your? How long has the force been a vegan?
Hello?
My yes. sister?
Yes.
Oh, over 20 years.
Over 20
vegan?
Years.
I'm not sure. Maybe she could text us and let us know. 10 years, maybe?
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, you're there, sir. What were you going to say? Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I hear you. Hello, who's this?
Oh, this is your cousin, Alan, just calling to say hi, Cousin Mike.
Oh, Cousin Alan, how are you, sir?
I am well, man.
Cousin Alan, hello.
A real Alan.
Cousin
Alan. I'm still here. Yeah, okay. Just saying hello to you and the gang. I just happened to... I said, wait a minute, he's on tonight. And I worked overtime, so I just tuned in and... just saying hello. All love right. you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy Cousin New Year. Alex.
Cousin Alan.
I didn't know there was a cousin.
All right.
Yeah, I have a Cousin Alan. That's right. Cousin Alan is the brother of Cousin Sue.
I like Sue.
I met Cousin Sue. I
that's
met
right.
Sue.
The
I
brother of Cousin
like
Sue.
That's
Sue.
Really right, Sue.
Yep. That's my sister.
Sue gets two thumbs up.
In Minnesota as we speak.
That's Woo. Right. Cousin
anyway.
Sue is it's a, and Cousin Kathy. Cousin Kathy.
I met her
also.
Too.
You met Cousin Kathy. Cousin Kathy, who used to come on the show. So,
yeah, she used to be there. That's right.
She used to come on the show, too. So, Cousin Kathy, this is the brother of Cousin Kathy, too.
And, all right. Okay.
That's
well,
the
I'm just getting home, so I'll see you later.
All right. Well, thank you, Alan. Love you, too. All right. So, there it is. That was Cousin Alan. Now, I have a dichotomy story here. Okay. This is, I find this somewhat interesting. And you tell me what you think, Jennifer. And I really wish your sister would call. What's the phone number here? Eugene? No, over there. What is it?
Over here.
Well, the phone number here, Mike, is 212-209-2877. Okay. Why so many white supremacists are into veganism?
Is that true?
From Hitler to
my
present.
My sister knows about this.
Okay.
She should call.
Is this true?
Elizabeth,
come on.
I'm reading it. 212-209-2877.
Okay.
And weigh in about the white supremacist vegans.
Okay, here we go.
That you told me about.
All right. Why so many white supremacists are into veganism? From Hitler to present day National Socialists, with YouTube cooking channels, the far right's anti meat ideology runs surprisingly deep.
Weird.
Now, this is from Vice magazine. Okay, and this is an article actually from October 2017, the same time that they discovered that reading textbooks is better.
Okay.
This is not news. This is just dichotomy information about what we were just talking about. It says, hey, if there was any doubt that white nationalists among us, it vanished this summer, and they talk about what happened in Charlottesville. They said before the movement known as the alt-right grew online and gained notoriety for its expressions of anti-Semitism and racism, as well, of course, as its vocal support of Donald Trump, journalists and academics have attempted to understand it. Few alt-right readers have repeatedly been interviewed by major media outlets, blah, 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 and they just talk about why is this stuff happening. But they said the slogan, Blut und Boden, in the original German, was popularized. Now, this is the concept of blood and soil. You've heard them say blood and soil?
Yeah.
All right. They said blood and soil was popularized by Walter Dahr in 1930. And although the concepts behind the phrase can be traced back to the 19th century Volkisch movement, it says Dahre, who was the German Minister of Agriculture from 1933 to 1942, and a staunch advocate for agricultural reform in Nazi Germany. Blood and Soil became a mythical reimagining of German identity, emphasizing the importance of racial heritage, blood, as tied to the land, soil. So when the white nationalists in Charlottesville chanted this phrase, it's not only to assert that the U.S. is a place for white people, but that white people are racially and spiritually embedded in the soil of America.
I'd like to embed them in the soil.
What I'm saying,
I would think the opposite. You know, I think he's like meat-eating. They like to hunt.
Now, here it is.
You know? Well, you know, they love their guns. And
that's a whole other thing. We talked about
that. They say they do it for sport.
Hunting recruiters. You know, there are hunting recruiters. We covered that last week. Here we go. By romanticizing white people's inherent connection to the land and nature, blood and soil also underscores notions of racial purity and nobility. Dietary commitments then become a means to prove one's racial superiority.
Nobility, that's hilarious.
There it is. Adolf Hitler, whose vegetarianism is well known in popular culture, certainly connected to with diet and race. And
wow.
They refer to Hitler's Table Talk, which is a collection of transcribed monologues delivered by the Führer in conversation with his inner circle. Okay. And they talk
about
it.
A lot of them still barbecue.
Well, stop. You never know, okay? So, they're just saying, so from this niche dietary group, the notion of blood and soil lends itself to an idealized vision of an Aryan ethical veganism as a part of the white people's racial purity and heritage.
What?
Romanticized veganism can serve as an entry point to white nationalism or reinforces other white nationalist
politics
beliefs.
Makes strange bedfellows.
Well, there's all these are cultural politics. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
That's crazy.
My sister was in a chat room where she was in a
dichotomy, though.
What? She was in a vegan chat room where all of a sudden these Trump supporters showed up and. She was just aghast, I believe.
Well, she was aghast. She didn't realize. She was like, what the
hell? It's just some kind of weird stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, tell her to do hashtag blood and soil and see what happens. Hashtag blood and soil vegan, you know? I mean, do a search. Sort of, it's, all right, so, again.
I don't know.
I need to cue up the Spock soundbite. Go ahead.
I have not met any right-wing vegans in my life, but,
yeah, but do you
I have met
where they
some
are? Okay.
Serious right-wing person that, like, loved meat. A person who said to me, your cousin is gay because he went to public school and watched Will and Grace. Like, Will and Grace wasn't even around when
he was clearly a keeper. What happened?
Wow.
Yeah, well, I didn't date him. Oh, but, okay. I just want to say that apparently my sister says our cousin, who's gay and voted for Trump, has just experienced voter's remorse and now is disgusted with Trump.
Well, but you
so
know what?
So there's some hope for
what
humanity.
What made her turn?
There's a Spanish phrase for that. A Spanish phrase for
I have not had this conversation with him. She did, so I didn't get the details yet. Yeah. But I'm just so delighted.
She doesn't send you, like, a Cliff Notes or anything?
I'm absolutely delighted that he has finally seen the light. I think it's one of those situations where I have known a couple of gay people where I think they feel if they are, like, right-wing, because his family was Republican. Like, well, guess what? I'm still normal. I'm still Republican. You know, it's like a kind of, like, hiding out and
keep one foot in the
session.
Yes.
Right. I have known other people like that, too.
And that's your take on it?
Yeah, that it's a way to feel
like...
You
don't think you can, you know, legitimately be gay and Republican?
I guess. Wait, my sister's probably going to...
Inclusion, in a way. You know, they're not... they're probably Republicans don't inclusion with gay rights or anything like
that. My sister texted...
Didn't Cheney have, like, a gay door?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Did they just sweep that under the rug, or they actually accepted her, right?
What choice did they have?
What are the choices they have?
What choice did they have?
It's like, we're going to kick out Cheney's daughter, ostracize her.
He's going to shoot her with buckshot or something.
Exactly.
I just got in trouble for mentioning family secrets. He is not listening, don't worry.
What's family secrets? Did you
He says wait, not live
miss,
in this
wait,
state.
Did I miss the secret? What
this
secret?
This is only this state.
No names were mentioned to protect the innocent.
I missed the secret. Tell it again.
He's talking about family dynamics.
Somebody's in trouble.
That's right. Yep.
She said I should keep this stuff to myself.
That's right. You better listen to the Force.
Those texts
the Force has spoken.
You will be silent.
I shouldn't be talking about it on the radio.
That's right.
You will be punished.
It just goes out to the ether of the frequencies.
The Ether of the Frequencies. That's the name of the album. Now, what did you say the phone number here was, Eugene?
I said the phone number was 212-209-2877.
I have a couple last anecdotes here for you.
Really? Is there anybody really out there listening?
That's a good question.
I sure hope so. We still have some time left.
In case you didn't hear.
Anybody listening to terrestrial radio anymore?
That's right.
That in itself is another dichotomy of how we're changing into whatever this is. You know, everything is on podcast or when you want to listen.
Listen, podcasts are the future. That's the future. The future is podcasts. And, you know, my concept of podcasts, because podcasts is just radio to go, is that, you know, it comes from the we developed into an on-demand culture. We want to listen to what we want to listen to, watch what we want to watch, when we want to watch it. We want to listen to music we want to listen to. We want to watch the shows we want to watch. We'll pay.
That's right.
That's what I want to do. I do not want to be beholden to the days of when you know, it's hard to make people wait week to week to watch a show. You know, you better be really good.
On demand.
You really got to be really good because I'd like to binge it.
I want it now.
You know, a lot of people will wait until it's done to binge it. You know?
Okay.
I'm one of those people. So I say all that to say that podcasts fit that. They fit right in there. It's like, you know, I like it. I can listen to 8 shows. I mean, I'll listen to everything. Maybe you will come back.
You got me.
Okay, so.
Oh, can I just say one thing?
Yes, you can.
Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Yes, it's the last 15
minutes. And did you
know,
my father, that's who spoke at his college graduation.
Really?
Can you think of a better speaker for your college graduation?
Where did your dad go to college?
At Hofstra. And then I thought, well, maybe he's remembering this wrong. And I looked it up, and I listened to the speech online today.
Oh, my God. Today you did. Today, really?
Yeah, I thought this is a good thing to do with my day.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Especially on
Martin Luther King Day. Did you tell your dad?
I did tell him. He was upset that I didn't believe him. So I was like, maybe he's remembering
he
this wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, you doubted me?
I could see
that. I remember
part, that
said,
part he wouldn't like. I could see that.
What
he
year
said
was
he looked like a boxer. He was built so powerfully, like he worked out and he just like looked great, you know.
What
like
year was that?
1965 at Hofstra University. And so I looked it up and sure enough it was online. And there was, and it was beautiful. It was a beautiful speech.
That's amazing.
Tears to your eyes.
You didn't doubt that, did you?
I did. For a second, I thought, like, could it really be? I mean, you know, for my I did not go to my college graduation, but you know, I went to a protest because we were going to have a Turkish dictator speak at our graduation. Mm. And we were like, what?
Turkish
actually,
dictator
it was the year
is
before
that?
I graduated.
What college is this? Were they
at Albany, at SUNY Albany. And we were like, no.
Who is running
this
the
person
campus?
With this disgusting human rights abuse is going to be.
Dictator?
Yes. Isn't that sick?
That's
so
bizarre.
So we protested.
Who was,
and then I don't know. Maybe they got Gilbert Gottfried instead. I don't remember. But, like, it was just like we were just aghast.
Turkish dictator or Gilbert Gottfried? What do you
We were just like.
I go for the Turkish
are
dictator.
Are you kidding?
I think the students will love that.
It was, yeah.
Oh,
so
that's funny.
When this is your choice for, you know, graduation speakers, I cannot believe he had Martin Luther
all
King.
Right. Well, speaking of all of that in college and education, I do have one of the things that we have, or we used to have, was a night shift word of the week. So I'm going to give out the word of the week. You ready?
I'm ready.
You ready?
I didn't know you had
White Castle.
The word of the week. Night shift word of the week is coddywomple. Okay, that's CODDIWOMPLE. Coddywomple.
What you call me?
Okay, coddywomple. And here's the meaning. To travel purposefully toward an as yet unknown destination.
Isn't that all of us?
Mm-hmm. Coddywomple.
I'm a coddywomple.
So just Night Shift, just cottywompling.
That's a nice title for a song, I think.
There it is, cottywomple.
And everyone was excited to hear that word.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. It's a way of...
The proud of the
Maybe it should be a dance.
Exactly.
The cottywomple.
Travel purposefully.
It's obvious, Mike, that somehow you have more time on your hands.
I do it all for the listeners.
So, cottywomple. So we have come to the end of another encore presentation of an old episode of Night Shift, and that was from 2019. And if you've been enjoying the show, please consider making a pledge in the name of Night Shift. We really, really, really need your support right now. You can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And make a pledge in the name. We really could use 10 WBAI buddies. I know I asked you earlier in the show, but I really need that. You can go to WBAI.org. And you just go to Night Shift, NITESHIFT. And when you go to that page, it'll show you how to donate in the name of the show. And that's all you need to do. So, WBAI.org. Or you can call 212-209-2950. Say